I was all alone. My times of trouble and pain. I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity.
Good morning. Good morning out there. This is John Neeters, back as your host of another edition of The Balancing Point, and really happy to be here. Again, I want to thank KEST, who is donating this time so that we can bring you some special topical information, topical meaning on a particular topic, as opposed to what I typically do on my Thursday shows, which is have people call in and ask questions. On the Monday shows that we do here from 9 to 10, for those of you that have not tuned in before, these are generally topical shows. I will have something that I feel is important and I want to share with you, and I'll go into it in moderate depth. In an hour, you know, we can go into moderate depth. We can do more than skim the surface, but certainly any of 100 things I mentioned, we might be able to go into more detail and look into. So again, this is to stimulate you to do some inquiry, to start doing more of your own research, looking at different sources for information to protect your health. Now, today's show is, the impetus for the show is that I got a call on Saturday from one of my very, very favorite patients who informed me, gave me the horrible news that his wife passed away a few days ago. And that she apparently died of a heart attack, very peacefully, fortunately, but very suddenly and unexpectedly, which is almost always the case with a heart attack. And so today, even though I've broached this subject a couple of different ways before, I want to spend an hour going over this issue of the heart, cardiovascular system, from both a traditional Chinese medical and a little bit from a classical Chinese medical approach, and also from a Western medical approach. Now, I do get some, a lot of people love that I do both, that I will attempt to bridge that gap or speak in a multidimensional or multi-modality way, and other people get irritated and say, well, you should kind of stick to Chinese medicine. Well, I find that my patients generally don't understand Chinese medicine. They do have a better understanding, at least, of what occurs from, you know, a Western pathological, pathogenic medical model. So I attempt to do both. One of the things that's important to remember, though, is that in any of these things that I speak about, A, I could be wrong. Some of these things are my opinions. Some of them are my clinical experience, and some of them are from sources that I read and trust. Now, at any time, those sources could be wrong, and I may misread them. So always take what I say with a grain of salt, or anybody else that you hear, take it with a grain of salt. We all have some bias, and hopefully we're aware of that, and often we're not. So today's show is to create a level of inquiry. So I will be speaking about my clinical experience. Also, I think I want to start out the show today with some recognition of where I get the information that I'm talking about, and hope that might, you know, lead you to want to search those things out too. So I'm going to mention a few books and articles as a way of getting started this morning, because often I run out of time at the end and I don't give proper acknowledgement. So I want to start out doing that today. I will be talking some about the HeartMind, the Xin, X-I-N, or H-S-I-N in the older Wade Giles, I think it is, translation. And some of that will be based on mostly on just my general understanding, but also on Paul Pitchford's book, which is titled Healing with Whole Foods. So if you're interested in a cross-platform, multi-dimensional look at food and how it affects you, and looking at a variety of illnesses that can be treated with food cures, I think this book, Healing with Whole Foods probably does the best job of combining those. I do have to, you know, and I use it when I teach nutrition to acupuncturists, because it does go across platform in a way that people then can utilize. It also has quite a few recipes and things in the back. The caveat on this book is that it is very pro-vegetarian in approach, even though he will talk about meat on occasion. It's very, very clear that his bias is very pro-vegetarian. Another book that I highly recommend is Nourishing Traditions. Nourishing Traditions, which is probably my favorite for my patients, and that's by Sally Fallon and Mary Enig from the Weston or the Price Pottinger Foundation. So Nourishing Traditions, and the caveat there is that they are very pro-carnivore and feel that traditionally people did not eat a grain-based diet. In fact, we know they couldn't have until about 10,000 years ago, and that they were primarily hunter-gatherers. And looking at the studies done by Dr. Weston Price in the 30s, they feel it clearly shows that people are healthier with a more balanced diet, primarily one that has very high-quality protein and meat in it. Okay, so those are two different sources that I highly recommend that come from opposite bias, and that's perfectly fine. It's just understand the bias. Other books that I recommend in terms of looking at cardiovascular health is The Sinatra Solution, The Sinatra Solution by Stephen Sinatra. He's calls himself an interventional cardiologist, and he has done quite a bit of study looking at a variety of nutrients that are effective in treating high blood pressure, atherosclerotic disease of the blood vessels and heart, and weak heart function, congestive heart failure, etc. So Sinatra, he has books that are more recent than that, which add a little bit more information that I think is good. He talks a little more about things like L-arginine. You might want to start with the Sinatra Solution because it's a little smaller and easier to digest. But any of his books would be fine for that. Also, in terms of looking at the Price Pottinger and Weston Price's work, one of the books that I have found to be very, very easy to understand, very usable in terms of its function, and a very good explanation of the work of Weston Price, but also looking at a variety of cultures who are very long-lived, you know, the Polynesians, the Melanesians, looking at Africans, and then some of the Vilcabamba. So lots of these cultures, and looking at what happened or how healthy they are when they're on their indigenous diets, and then what happens in terms of cardiovascular disease and cancer and diabetes when they start to stray and start eating a modern American diet. And I think if you read this particular book, it'll be a little shocking to you. And this is Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine. Traditional Foods Are Your Best Medicine, and then a long subtitle. And that's by Ronald Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D, and he's a naturopath. So Ronald Schmid. Again, good, well-rounded look at these things. I will talk a little bit about natokinase and cardiovascular health, and there was some very good research in that area that was done by and published by Ralph Holsworth, H-O-L-S-W-O-R-T-H, Jr., and he's a doctor of osteopathy. So again, you see this coming from a lot of different sources. We have an MD, a naturopath, acupuncturist, and DOs, but really all people who are looking a little bit outside the conventional Western medical box. And I believe these people all get dramatically better results than people in the box. So Ralph Holsworth, he's a junior, doctor of osteopathy, and has some very good information on natokinase and looking at studies that have been done and the history of natto. So I highly recommend Holsworth's work. And then a couple of older books that I think can give a little more understanding. One is Grossly Simplistic, but some nice charts. I think they explain some of these ideas very well. And that book is Sugar Busters, very old book. I don't know how, it's at least, I don't know how old it is, but it's been out for quite a while, probably 15 years. And these are the people that really brought to light the glycemic index. And what I like about this book, and you can probably pick it up for a buck, is great charts on diabetes, and even more importantly, a chart that I try to kind of replicate for my patients is blood sugar levels after the ingestion of particular types of food. There's one that shows the dramatic difference, actually, between whole wheat, cracked wheat, coarse flour, and fine wheat flour in terms of how rapidly it causes the sugar and insulin levels to go up. So, again, a nice, I like that one for the charts, and if you can pick it up for a buck, I would go for it. Then a couple of dietary books. The Eskimo Diet, another book that's been around for a while, and again, I don't know how long, I'm guessing about 20 years at least for the Eskimo Diet. It's called How to Avoid a Heart Attack, and they look at lots and lots of studies who've been in here, and including Dr. Reg Sainer's 7-year study of the effects of fish oil on heart patients. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about this is it's only in the last 2 years that I have started to see significant information on the effect of fish oils at preventing cardiovascular disease. And it's only in the last year that we have Western approved, FDA approved fish oil now that we can get for, I don't know, $180, $200 a bottle, which I don't believe is any better than these other fish oils. But now we have that evidence. But you can go back to Sainer's studies from 20 to 25 years ago. He was quoting studies that are much older than that. So this information's been out there forever. And what's significant about that is, as I've said many, many times, it takes at least an average of about 17 to 20 years for any dietary information or new information that is not pharmaceutical to get out to the masses of people. And vitamin D took about 12, 13 years, but then it got a little quicker because there were companies making a lot of money on it. So the Eskimo Diet is a nice thing to look at, and it really correlates very well with Schmidt's book. Schmidt looked at some of the explorers, the Arctic explorers, and who were actually eating only animal food diets. And they were replicating the diets of the Eskimos because the Eskimos were so healthy. And basically all the doctors at the time said they were going to just kill themselves, that they would get scurvy from lack of vitamin C, that they'd get heart disease, et cetera. Well, the reality is they actually tracked these people for years. There were a couple of Scandinavian explorers that they tracked. One of them, he came back, and I don't remember, Stephenson, in the late 20s, nobody would believe that he was living on this diet. So they actually, while he was in the United States, he came in daily for a year to a lab where they drew his blood, took his stool samples to make sure he wasn't lying and eating vegetable products, and his health did not diminish at all, and in fact, it went up. And his point being that if you are eating the right meat and you're eating this properly and not overcooking it and it's high quality, you can get all the nutrients. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but it was certainly true in his case, and it's true for the Eskimos. Now, there's probably some genetic issues there, so I'm not recommending that diet for anybody. But we shouldn't throw these things out because of fads. Okay, I want to talk about now the heart. I was talking to someone yesterday about Parkinson's disease and how intimately the heart mind in Chinese medicine is involved. And again, Xin means not just the physical heart, but the heart mind, the mental emotional aspects. And as people start to lose balance in that heart mind, there are a variety of diseases, including, I believe, Parkinson's disease and other neurodegenerative disorders that will start to show up. Now, some general signs in Chinese medicine, of a heart-mind imbalance could be a scattered or confused mind, difficulty concentrating, excess laughter, which or no laughter. And mostly, when you see people that are just kind of goofy, giddy, and can't really focus, that is actually a difficulty in the heart-mind. However, more often I find this showing up as a deficiency, and of people having no ability to laugh, they're losing their ability to laugh at themselves, which I think is critical to participate in the world. And in those patients, one of the prescriptions I will give them is I tell them they can't watch TV, or if they do, they can only watch comedies. They tend to be listening to either NPR, if that's their political leaning, or Democracy Now!, or to Fox News, and either one of them will kill your joy, right? There is no joy there. It's all the woes and difficulties of the world, and they may be accurate, or they may be inaccurate. However, they damage the heart-mind. And so too much of that is really a problem. The patient the person I talked to yesterday, who has a family member that's been diagnosed with Parkinson's, is that I told, and she's a big, watches a lot of Fox News and a lot of talk shows, et cetera, and I told them she can't watch those anymore, and she has to have music playing at least 16 hours a day in her house to start restoring that heart-mind balance. In terms of the heart, from a Chinese medical standpoint, the external manifestation of the heart is in the complexion. So when you get someone that's really ruddy complected, like really red skin, that will be a heart excess. If you have people that are very, very pale, that is a heart deficiency. Now, there are lots of organs that may play into this. It's, you know, if there's a heart excess, there's usually a liver excess with it. If there's a heart deficiency with that whiteness, there may be lung deficiency, etc. But just grossly, if someone's very, very pale, I worry immediately about their cardiovascular system and anything from anemia to congestive heart failure. If it's excess, if it's ruddy, then I worry about hypertension, atherosclerotic disease, etc., possible stroke. So either way can be a problem. Speech problems, stuttering, very confused speech, like people just kind of bounce back and forth and they're often confused. A lot of different mental illnesses are heart-related, as is a great deal of depression. Now, often with students, if someone comes in with depression, they immediately think the liver because of the concept of liver depression, qi stagnation. And that's a valid place to start, but a great deal of depression is really a heart issue in traditional Chinese medicine. So if there's poor circulation, aversion to heat, a weak spirit, like lassitude, like you just don't care anymore. Those are all potential signs of a heart imbalance. Now, a deficiency of yin and blood of the heart, those will have very similar effects on the spirit or the shen. And you need you need that yin and blood to hold the spirit into the body. So when people are kind of wandering, they can't focus, they're dreaming too much, their behavior gets kind of irrational, even insane, that can be a heart yin or blood deficiency. And if it's not a big difference, but if it's yin deficiency, you'll find more heat signs. You might find a red tongue and cheeks, a fast pulse or a thin pulse, etc. But essentially, they're from the same source. So often, this is from a lot of excessive things. Things that deplete the yin and that should be avoided with these patients are tobacco, alcohol, coffee, etc. And I'm going to get into remedies for these specifically in a little while. Now, one of the reasons that I want to talk about this, besides the fact that the wife of one of my very dear patients passed away, is because this is the number one killer of American men and women. Okay, number one. Everybody's afraid of cancer, but heart disease is number one in terms of being a killer. It tends to take people often at a very young age also. And so here we're talking about either diseases of the heart itself. There are many things that can affect that. There can be problems with the valves. There can be problems with the shape of the heart as it has to work too hard. And the heart being a muscle, we must remember, if you over-exercise that muscle, what happens when you exercise a muscle? It gets bigger. And if you over-exercise it, certain parts of the heart can expand or get stronger, actually, in relationship to other parts of the heart. And then you have difficulties in the electrical signaling in the heart as the impulse travels. Also, we look at blood vessel diseases, and these are really rampant in the United States. We look, you know, all of this issue about cholesterol, which is really grossly overplayed, but there are some very significant problems with the blood vessels. And we see then those conditions often will result in something that's called a myocardial infarction. Oh, I want to give one more credit before I move on. A lot of the information from the Western stuff I got from Dr. Cutler, who has some great information out there. And if you have, you know, anyone in your family that has cardiovascular disease of any type, or you're concerned about this, or you want more in-depth information, I would check out Dr. Michael Cutler, Cutler, who has written a wonderful article on cardiovascular health. And I'm going to be quoting from him some today. And I'm going to quote right now. He says, according to the American Heart Association, someone in America has a heart attack every 29 seconds. 29 seconds. And every minute, someone dies from a heart attack. So that means 64 million Americans suffer from cardiovascular disease, and 1.5 million Americans will die every year from heart attack alone. So that's not even including a lot of the other cardiovascular diseases. Now, in the American Journal of Cardiology, there was a study reported called the Bogalusa Heart Study, and this one really woke a lot of people up. There was a similar study done back in the 1950s, but that kind of was forgotten a bit. So in 1992, this Bogalusa Heart Study that was published, and what they did is post-mortem autopsy evaluations on people age 6 to 30 years old who died accidental deaths. And so they were considered absolutely disease-free before they died. Okay, these are really healthy-looking individuals. And they found extensive plaque buildup in most of these seemingly disease-free individuals. Now, some of them had atherosclerosis and plaque buildup over 70% of the inner lining of their aortas. So that's an incredibly high level amongst these people that were thought to be completely healthy and free of cardiovascular disease. And this is one of the reasons that I send so many of my patients back to their doctors to get evaluations that they have not been getting, or I send them out to get the evaluations myself. About one out of every two Americans, this is very particular and important in more, quote, primitive, end quote, cultures, non-industrialized countries, the rate of cardiovascular disease is dramatically lower. There are cultures where it's still almost unknown. And around the turn of the century, 1900s, that turn of the century, showing my age there, you know, if you look at textbooks for medical students, cardiovascular disease has a very, very small section that is, or at least much smaller than currently given to those diseases. It's because they were so much less common. Now, if you understand how atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, you know, how it occurs, I think you have a lot better chance of avoiding it. And the thing to remember is that mostly this process of creating hard arteries is caused by inflammation. Now, some of that is inflammation caused by pathogenic organisms. Chlamydia, for example, is a well-known cause of cardiovascular disease. A lot of it is from poor diet. We know if you eat trans fats, and it'll damage the arteries. If you eat high amounts of sugar and have high insulin levels or high uric acid foods, all of those cause damage to the lining of the blood vessels through this inflammatory process. So there are lots of things. High blood pressure, again, the constant pounding of the blood on those arterial walls essentially bruises them and breaks them and causes inflammation. Now, once there is damage to this very thin lining, which is called the endothelium, this basic inner lining, once that gets damaged, it triggers a whole cascade of events. It's important to remember that these events are not bad in and of themselves. They are life-saving events in a normal, healthy person. When you have damage to the lining of the arteries, you want the body to signal that there's a problem and fix it. What occurs, though, with long-term inflammation, chronic inflammation, is the body doesn't shut off those processes properly, sometimes because the insult is still occurring. Usually that's the case, but sometimes it's just an over-response. So the damage to this lining of the arteries, not the veins, but the arteries, because there's much less pressure on the veins, the endothelium, once it gets damaged, it triggers an increase in mechanisms that cause clotting. The body doesn't want you to bleed to death, so it will cause clots. So you get a whole range, again, of responses. One of those is an increase in white blood cells. I've spoken before, one of the key tests for that I get worried about, particularly in women, is if there's an elevated white blood cell count. And that's elevated not out of what's called normal ranges on most tests, but if women are in the top quartile of normal, okay, it says normal when you look at it, those women have twice the cardiovascular risk, twice the heart attack risk over the following 10 years. That's why I don't consider that normal. Often it's a sign of this inflammatory process. So the body calls out, a lot of these white cells, these protective cells, come to the site, and then you get this cascade of what are called cytokines. And cytokines are chemicals that tell the body that we need even more immune cells. Right, so they're the ones, they kind of get there and assess the damage, and they call for, it's like a first responder goes out and it triggers a one-alarm fire. And then that truck arrives on the scene, and they say, oh, no, this is a 10-alarm fire. And that's kind of like the cytokines triggering. It also triggers a response of molecules that cause adhesion. And by the way, this is one of the areas that Chinese formulas are so good. Those adhesion molecules, if you've listened to my digestive talks, you've heard me talk about something called lectins, L-E-C-T-I-N-S, which have the ability to stick to different tissues because of their high glycoprotein content and the way they're formed. They can stick. They're called adhesion molecules. Well, there is a special group of those called selectins, S-E, lectins, that are very active in the arteries. And those adhere to the arteries. Now, there's one herb, which I've talked about many times, called Danshen, D-A-N-S-H-E-N, which is in the blood-moving category in Chinese medicine. And that herb has the ability to lower selectin levels by over 10%. And that's one of the reasons it's such an effective herb in so many Chinese herbal formulas. So then what happens, the endothelium, the lining, becomes more, those selectins cause it to leak, to become more permeable. That's their job, but they do their job too well. And when that happens, cholesterol particles can penetrate into the lining of the endothelium, and they will get into deeper levels of the artery. And so when that happens, the there are other proteins also that get in there, and they get into the lining of the artery, and they cause scarring. And when that scarring occurs, then we get another part of the cascade occurring, and that is the one that finally really involves more cholesterol. Now, initially, the hole's very small, and mostly we get very tiny particles. That's why things like lipoprotein A are really worth looking at, much more so than general cholesterol levels, because they are much more likely to penetrate into the arteries and cause this plaquing and sclerosis. And so those molecules then change form, the next group of them, and they get incorporated into immune complexes, which are much larger molecules, and they're very, very sticky. Those then get broken down by other white cells, which is, you know, a very important immune function, and that causes even further problems, more inflammation inside the blood vessel. And so the smooth muscle cells and these fat-filled, cholesterol-filled cells create what's called a foam cell. Those then accumulate, and they cause a streaking inside the wall of the artery. And that's formed of cholesterol. It's also formed of fibrins, which are clot-forming materials. And that is really what holds step things together. And then finally, in the body's attempt to save your life, those smooth muscle cells try to reverse that problem, and they produce collagen. And collagen is the matrix that holds a lot of your body tissues together. And that forms a scar-like substance over the injury to try to protect you. And then, as happens in a lot of scar tissue, you get a calcium buildup, and it forms this substance that is extremely hard, right? So it's like building a brick house, but it's very, very hard. And so this very complex array is what then causes this calcification and the plaquing. Now, some causes of atherosclerosis, and again, I'm kind of at this point, just so I don't miss anything, looking at Michael Cutler's list. It's a very good list. He points out that some of the common problems are infections, and there are quite a few different infections, chlamydia pneumonia being the one that I see the most commonly implicated. As Cutler points out, this is a more accurate predictor of coronary artery disease than all of the other well-known risk factors. Okay, so if you take high cholesterol, you take obesity, you take diabetes, you take high blood pressure, you put those all together, and it is not as high a predictor as cytomegalovirus and chlamydia in terms of accurately predicting atherosclerotic plaques. And yet I have seen none of my patients that have come in with atherosclerotic plaques or hardening of the arteries. I've never seen them. Now, I'm sure there are doctors out there doing it, but I haven't seen them get tested for cytomegalovirus, herpes viruses, and chlamydia, or even H. pylori. We know H. pylori, which we think about as the ulcer form or causing bacteria, is also implicated in cardiovascular disease, as are a whole host of other bacteria, a lot of the oral bacteria. We know that people with problems with the gums have much higher rates of cardiovascular disease, cardiac inflammation, hardening of the arteries, and death. So any of these bacteria can get to the cell walls and start in the arteries and start causing problems. Now, they are particularly problematic if there's a dysfunction in the heart valves, so that the blood being ejected from one chamber to another can form little eddies and whirlpools if it doesn't move well, and those bacteria then can cling to the heart in those little eddies. And so that's one of the dangers of people that have severe palpitations and arrhythmias, is when the heart misses a beat, the blood pools there a little bit longer, you get a different type of turbulence in the heart itself, and that bacteria has a greater chance of getting a foothold and damaging the heart. And that's why when people come in with even minor palpitations, I'm really concerned about that, and we set out to get rid of them as quickly as we can. Other things that known causes of hardening of the arteries are molecules that we call free radicals, and these are caused by radiation. They're caused by heavy metal toxicities, particularly mercury, but there's a whole range of heavy metals that cause iron is one of the biggest ones. If people have too high an iron level, that causes massive free radical release, which can damage the arteries. And so you then want to look at uric acid levels, which cause oxidative stress. Of course, you'd want to do a C-reactive protein test, which doesn't tell the causation, but it tells the level of oxidative stress and inflammation in the arteries. And then, as I said, increased blood turbulence is also a major problem there. So that's one form, one type of cardiovascular disease, is the penetration of these molecules, mostly fats and fibrin deposits, into the lining of the arteries that then causes a further cascade of chemicals and cytokine release and foam cells and eventually calcification. Now, the good news is this is reversible. Okay, there's lots of information out there that this is reversible. Now, the other thing that we look at in terms of potential cardiovascular disease is the actual blood flow. Is the blood hypercoagulable? Is it, or hypercoagulated? And are the platelets and the other and the red blood cells actually themselves sticking together? Do you have sticky blood? You know, if you try to pump a really heavy fluid through something, it takes a lot more pressure than if you have a very thin fluid. So if your blood is too thick, your heart's going to have to pump stronger. If you have a blocked liver from any number we call it portal vein hypertension. So if the liver is stagnant, then it takes more pressure to move the blood flow through, so you'd have high blood pressure. So that's a second problem. A third problem is in the actual electrical signaling in the heart. I mentioned if the heart changes shape, either through overexercise, potentially through underexercise, through stress, and on a very high level through grief. One of my callers, Eloise Hill, once called in to talk about a show that she'd seen on TV where a cardiologist actually brought in pictures of a heart, and then that same heart a few months later, after the person had lost a spouse, I believe it was, and had been going through this horrible grieving process, and it was incredible, and I've seen similar pictures. It was incredibly dramatic. The shape of the heart had changed. And so we talk about a broken heart as an emotional issue. It is not just an emotional issue. The physical structure of the heart changes. And with that change in the physical structure of the heart, we need to have, or what will happen is, there's a generator of electricity, which we usually call a pacemaker, but it's the sinoatrial node. And it's located in one part of the heart, and it sends out electrical impulses. And those have to be very carefully timed as they get to the different chambers of the heart, because they have to go in a particular sequence. It's like in your car. You need very accurate timing so that all of your cylinders aren't trying to pump at the same time. Same with the heart. And so when that gets out of balance, you then start having more severe electrical activity problems. And this is often what women die of. Men do die of it also, but in women I see a lot of these or read about a lot of this type of heart attack. And what happens is the blood doesn't get pumped properly. You need to remember what an incredibly important muscle the heart is. You know, we don't often think about it as being the most important muscle in our body, but believe me, it is. And so 24 hours a day, through your entire lifetime, you have about 300 trillion cells in your body, and those all need blood and nutrients. And a typical heart contracts and relaxes about 100,000 times a day and pumps about 2,000 gallons of blood. That's a lot of blood. 2,000 gallons of blood gets pumped every day. And so if you're 70 years old, you probably have averaged about 2.5 billion pumps from that muscle. Now think about 2.5 billion pumps on a little handheld weight machine. You couldn't do it. You couldn't do it 100,000 times a day. You probably couldn't do it 1,000 times a day. So that's how critical getting nutrients to the heart is. And that's where I love Stephen Sinatra's book, as he talks about the combination of L-carnitine and coenzyme Q10 that work on the opposite sides of a membrane in the mitochondria to provide this energy in the ATP cycle, because that's what the heart lives on, is this ATP cycle. And it runs out of ATP in a matter of seconds if it's not constantly supplied. So it's critical, and that's one of the problems with many of the drugs used to treat cardiovascular and high blood pressure problems, is they damage that ATP cycle and cause further damage. And then he recommends D-ribose to drive the CoQ10 and L-carnitine into the heart, and then lots of magnesium to make sure that the heart can relax properly. So again, check out Sinatra's book for the electrical generating system. But again, it's huge issue. There are lots and lots of symptoms of problem. I'm not going to go into the short-term things like of a heart attack. I do recommend that you read those, but I just don't have enough time. One thing to look for is something called intermittent claudication, and I've diagnosed this in quite a few people, sent them to their medical practitioners, or at least suspected it. I'm not doing the test to confirm it, but I suspect it. And this is, you will have pain in the calf or even the thigh muscles, but usually in the calf during exercise. And this will get worse over the years. Now, what's really significant about this is that when you stop exercising, the pain will generally go away relatively quickly. If that's the case, you need to see your medical doctor and get checked to make sure that there isn't some thrombosis in there or some problem causing that claudication. So many things to talk about. Let's see, how much time do I have here? Not enough. So some risk factors for coronary artery disease. If there's a family history, there's a much higher risk. Once you hit about 65, even if you have normal cholesterol and other risk factors, just living that long is likely to damage the endothelium and certain to damage it in our culture. Again, if you're living in the Vilcabamba Valley, maybe not. But living here with the amount of stress hormones we pump into our body, yeah. Menopause is a significant shift in cardiovascular risk for women. Women that are menstruating have much lower cardiovascular risk, and as soon as menopause happens, that cardiovascular risk in women comes up to about the same level as it is in men. Tobacco smoking doubles your risk of heart attack, and then high blood pressure, that's caused by food, lifestyle, smoking, etc., anything that causes the hardening of the arteries. Now, one of the things, just as a side note here, is if I have a patient who comes in and she's been to her doctor and her blood pressure was 160 over 90, but when she checks it at home, she's down in the 120 over 80 category. I don't really worry about that very much, because what that's telling me is that the arteries themselves are still functional. Her blood pressure can go down to a fairly normal range, and that it's probably a stress-type reaction that's getting it up. Now, we want to limit that stress reaction, but I'm less concerned with her than I am with a patient who's at, say, 150 all the time for a systolic. That is a lot more risk to me. because it's more likely that it's an arterial atherosclerotic problem. Diabetes, of course, is a risk factor. Maybe the biggest risk factor, if you're going to quantify it, is a lack of physical activity and exercise. People who are sedentary have much higher heart attack rates. Obesity, maybe directly, but it's certainly indirectly, through blood sugar issues, and often there's a lack of exercise. Then again, infection. Again, chlamydia is the biggie, chlamydia pneumonia, because it triggers this really significant immune response in the lining of the arteries. And, you know, when they check those lesions, they're there in most diseased heart tissue and almost completely absent in healthy heart tissue. Also, the human herpes virus 6, HHV6, which is often overlooked in biomedicine, the very tiny bacteria, sometimes called stealth bacteria, and cytomegalovirus are all been shown to be implicated in the development of hardening of the arteries. So you want to get tested for those. Allergies, people that have allergies have higher high blood pressure or higher atherosclerosis rates. They also have higher rates of Alzheimer's disease. And I believe from the information I've looked at that taking medications to stop those allergies actually do not prevent the risk factors from them. And that's because the things in the blood, the leukotrienes and the mast cells, et cetera, that play such a big role in this, are still secreting the inflammatory molecules. They're just the receptor cells are shut off. So I think it may be worse. I don't have absolute confirmation of that, but I think it may be worse taking the anti-allergy medications. But then moving on, any chronic infection, any chronic infection. So dental, urinary tract, respiratory, any of those things that is chronic, they quadrupled, increased by four times the rate of heart disease or atherosclerosis. So those need to be cleared out, any of those. Hostility is really the biggie. Again, when you're hostile, you don't have any joy. You don't see hostile people smiling much. All these stress hormones, right, adrenaline, cortisol, et cetera. There was one study that Cutler quoted indicating a 500% increase in heart attacks in people who experience a lot of anger, either high anger or frequent anger, are 500% more likely to have a heart attack. Now, blood tests. I've given you a test before, but I'm actually going to tick down. I'm going to borrow Dr. Cutler's list here, and please go check his things out, and I hope he's not doesn't have a problem that I'm going through this, but because it's I've given these information, but in a slightly different order. And so he's looking at fibrinogen, high fibrinogen levels, and fibrin causes, it kind of grabs different cells and forms a matrix to form a clot. And so if you have a higher fibrinogen level, you're going to clot too easily and form lesions or clots on the lining of the arteries. And this is, you can lower it by moderating. Modest alcohol consumption seems to be the best. You know, one or two drinks a couple times a week, increasing exercise, and as you get your HDL levels up, it lowers fibrinogen levels, and again, to get HDL levels up, high-quality fish oils or krill oil, cod liver oil, and exercise are two of the best. You want a high-sensitivity C-reactive protein. And high sensitivity, it'll be usually measured from 0 to 3. So if you have a different measurement, it's probably not high sensitivity. And you want that because it's very specific it's an indicator of inflammation in the heart and blood vessels in particular. Glucose, of course, you know, high insulin levels. I recommend patients also get insulin levels tested along with the glucose. High iron, I've mentioned many times in children and particularly vegetarian children, I can never get their iron levels high enough. It's almost impossible, and they often suffer from iron-deficient diseases. It's very, very difficult. But in children and in menstruating women, particularly if it's a heavy menses, I'm constantly trying to get their iron levels up. And in adult men and menopausal women, I'm constantly working to get their iron levels down. When I say constantly, there are obviously exceptions. But those are I'm constantly on the lookout, let's say that. Because the more iron there is, the more rusting of that iron or oxidation of that iron, and that's all free radicals that cause the LDL, the low-density lipoprotein, to oxidize. And that's what causes the problems, the oxidation. And then your normal cholesterol testing, I recommend a VAP test, a vertical auto profile, because it breaks down the cholesterol into about 16 measures and the blood fats, rather than the 4 measures that I find quite inadequate. Testosterone levels in men are really critical. Low testosterone is a real problem in terms of cardiovascular health. So those are things to look at. Now, from a Chinese medical standpoint, let me get a few minutes in there. We have lots and lots of formulas to deal with those specific problems, every one of them. For example, if you pick up another good book, The Clinical Manual of Oriental Medicine by Lotus Institute, and I actually have that in front of me, and I'm going to turn to coronary heart disease. And they have 8 different suggestions for formulations for coronary heart disease. So chest pain with numbness, chest pain with high cholesterol and triglycerides, chest pain with fatty liver and obesity, chest pain with high blood pressure or dizziness, chest pain with flushed face, red eyes, generalized weakness, etc. So those are all things just for coronary heart disease, not even other types of heart disease problems. They have 8 recommendations just in their product line. Okay. Now, there's several formulas that I use kind of as the base of what I use, and I'm always modifying things, but really as the base formulas, there's one called Shuifu Juyusan, or Shuifu Juyutong is actually the original title, but I use a powder which is called a san. And this is a formula, it really means decoction for expelling stasis from the blood mansion. And stasis means static blood that isn't moving properly. And so this is can be from a blockage of the flow of qi and blood through the chest. There are lots of different things that you'll see, spontaneous sweating, spirit depression, confusion, and all the things I mentioned before. And it's important to remember that any enduring disorder, so I was talking about chronic disease, any enduring disorder will cause blood stasis. So Shuifu Juyutong is to treat replete or excess conditions. There's too much blood stasis, and it isn't intended to use long-term without modification. So this moves the blood brilliantly, but eventually it will weaken you because it's moving it too strongly. So I like to add a formula called Shengmaisan, Shengmaisan, and this formula was originally used to treat people who had had summer heat, they had heat stroke, and it had dried up their fluids, and they were very near death. In fact, the formula means pulse-engendering powder or to bring back the pulse in people that are nearly dead. And this is a very simple formula, but I find when added to Shuifu Juyutong, it gives the ability use it long term. And so Shengmaisan is very powerful to boost the spleen qi, which then supports the heart qi. So this I look at going cross platform, used more as the electrical impulse problems. It's very effective for those electrical impulse problems, where the Shuifu Juyutong is good at moving the blood that has become static in the chest. I then also add a third formula, which is called Dan Shen Yin, and I've mentioned the herb Dan Shen many times. So Dan Shen Yin has very, very high percentage of Don Shen. Typically, it's about 75% of the formula. And so it's the chief ingredient. It invigorates the blood, transforms blood stasis, and it will alleviate pain. So it's very powerful. And then there are a couple of other herbs in there. Tanshong, which is Santali Alba, and Shaoren, which really then stimulate other parts of the body to move the qi and clear out the qi stagnation in the chest. So it, the number one thing is to invigorate the blood. The secondary is to regulate the qi. So I find this very powerful, things like angina pectoris, any coronary artery disease, to treat that. So I'm not going to get apparently into a lot of other supplements you can use, but I've certainly talked about them in other shows. L-arginine, I think number one for the restoration of the and removal of the plaques, used long-term. Natokinase to prevent the static blood from sticking so much for the platelet aggregation. Something like serrapeptase or serratiopeptase to break down those fibrin deposits that from the high fibrinogen levels. And then, of course, Dr. Sinatra's magnesium, L-carnitine, CoQ10, and D-ribose essential. So these are really the starting points. Vitamin C is critical for artery repair, for the repair of the collagen matrix. Vitamin D, essential for all of these immune functions. So those are the places I would start. If you have any suspicion that you may have a problem, I would recommend that you get to an acupuncturist, an herbalist primarily, that understands these conditions and can create formulas for you, or get to an interventional cardiologist, someone that is proactive at treating these conditions, again, like Dr. Joe Prendergast. Len Saputo also would be, although he's not an interventional cardiologist, would take an enlightened view at how to treat these things. But the bottom line is, given our lifestyle, given our stress, given our dietary limitations, we must assume that we have coronary artery problems. So I want you to be happy. I want you to be joyous. Take care of your heart. The symbol on my business card is the symbol for joy. So be joyous. Have fun. Eat well. Be happy. And have a happy, happy heart. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Balancing Point Radio Show with John Needers, Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine and licensed acupuncturist. You may contact the office of John Needers at 510-814-6900 for appointments. That's 510-814-6900. Also, go to the website www.alamedaacupuncture.com. That's www.alamedaacupuncture.com. Be sure to join John Needers in the Balancing Point Thursday mornings, 8 a.m., right here on KEST AM 1450.